This is KBOO's The Voice of the Middle East. صوت الشرق الاوسط من اذاعه كيبو و صدای خبر میانه از رادیو KBOO.
طلوا حبابنا طلوا نسيبنا بين ربوعنا قلبنا تحت سهرات الجوال وطلوا حبابنا طلوا نسيبنا بين ربوعنا بالفيات غنينا وعلى مياض لعينا على أقصر ما خلو من زمان الطير الشال نحن حكايات في بالو منا نغمات موال نحن حكايات
صلى صلى
أوف نحن حكايات في بالو منا نغمات موال.
Welcome to another installment of The Voices of the Middle East. This is Gudarz Ektidari, your host for tonight. As you probably know, we are in the middle of our pledge drive, and this is basically your turn to support the programming and the kind of programs that we bring to you. And before I go to Pledge Central, I would like to mention that this week and last week, actually, the past 2 weeks have been very unfortunate with what is happening in Iraq, and administration policy finally have triggered a all-out war and insurgents, as they call it. But the fact of the matter is that we have now started a real crusade and a religion war in the region. And we are now fighting both Shiite and Sunnis in Iraq. What was the beginning strategy to create some sort of difference between different factions of Muslims in Iraq have now brought them both together and against the occupation forces. And when you listen to news and you hear about like attacks on mosques and those kind of establishment, this really hits the heart of Islamic world and makes the situation even more difficult. And the exit strategy that everybody is asking administration for is now becoming more relevant, understanding the situation and the delicacy of issues there becomes very, 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 very important to know exactly what are the different forces in the region and in Iraq and how we are going to come up with a resolve in that area, especially considering the fact that now we are in a mess that really getting out of it becomes more difficult as day goes by. And obviously United Nations is now not interested in getting involved in something that is as serious as it's going to be. The other day, I want to give you an example of what would be the difference between this radio station and other outlets that you can get to with AM dial or FM dial. The other day at debut of Air America, I, just like other people who were longing for a voice of reason on AM dial, I tuned in. And in fact, I told most of my colleagues about this new phenomenon that's coming up at 9 o'clock on Wednesday, so I tried to catch the first shows, the Old Franken program, and then at noon, they had another thing up, and I think Ed Schultz show in Portland, and I was listening, and it turned out that the topic was about the oil prices, and why president could not do anything about it. They also mentioned that, like, Saudi Arabia and OPEC are cutting production to make life even harder on Americans. The night before that, I was watching Fox TV. The same topic came up, and one of the pundits over there said, well, how come we are fighting for these countries and giving our blood, but they raise oil price on us? I realized a reality that Middle East region is just like a turkey that you can slaughter in wedding or mourning, as Persians say. It doesn't matter who you listen to, conservatives or so-called liberals. The scapegoat is the same, Arabs and Middle East countries. The problem is actually the OPEC is not a Middle Eastern institution. Out of 11 member countries, only 5 of them are from Middle East. The other 6 are from Northern Africa, West Africa, Indonesia, and even Venezuela is part of the OPEC. And in fact, Venezuela was a founder back in late 50s. So I thought maybe I need to bring some sense to this discussion. And because of that, I kind of searched for an expert, and I found a gentleman, Mr. Hossein Kamali, who is a consultant and former senior United Nations field advisor and director. And he has also served on Iranian delegation to OPEC for many years. And I contacted him. He has been working with UN since 1969 when he joined UNIDO in Vienna, and then served in West Africa and in Sudan between 1987 and 1994. And he's a recipient of Ford Foundation scholarship. And I reached him at his house in Vienna. And because of the time differences, I had to make a recording of this interview. So here it goes. I asked him to give us a little brief and introduction on the OPEC and the history of OPEC itself. And then we continue our discussion about the mechanisms for oil pricing.
OPEC, as you know, is an international organization of 11 developing countries. Of course, these countries are heavily dependent on the oil revenue as their main source of income. The reason for establishing OPEC and dates back to 1949, when Venezuela approached Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia and Kuwait to have some kind of dialogue and explore the possibility of cooperation. And later, because the oil companies in Venezuela and Middle East, They reduced the oil prices without, unilaterally. Mm-hmm. And this brought the need for cooperation between these countries as a result of which a conference was held first in Cairo. And these countries called the petroleum companies not to take any action on pricing without consulting their governments. Mm-hmm. But again, the oil companies ignored this resolution. And finally, September 1960, these 5 countries, this means Iran, Iraq, of course, it was held in Baghdad, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Venezuela, had their first meeting in Baghdad, and that was the time that they decided to create the OPEC. At present, of course, there are 11 countries, but those countries which I mentioned, they are called the founders of OPEC.
So who are the board of governors of OPEC, and what are their duties?
The board of governors is composed of one government nominated by each member country, which is confirmed by the conference. Uh-huh. For 2 years. The board is actually the governing policy of the organization. Uh-huh. Which direct the and implement the resolutions and draw the budget, annual budget, and submit the conference for the approval. And the conference is usually held twice a year. The Secretariat of OPEC was first in Geneva, Switzerland, and then moved to Vienna, Austria, which is currently here in Austria. And of course, there is a secretariat which carries out the executive functions of the organization according with its constitutions.
Okay.
And it is, of course, a secretary general, which is legally the representative of the organization and chief executive. And he is nominated and then approved by the conference also.
Okay, can you elaborate a little bit on the function of OPEC in oil market, especially like the oil price mechanisms and how do they control the production and level of production for different countries?
Well, OPEC members collectively supply about 40% of the world's oil output and possess more than 3/4 of the world total proven crude oil reserves.
Right.
And this is, if you have time, perhaps if I give you some figures that may clarify the matter further.
Yeah, please do.
How much oil, for instance, the world needs,
uh-huh.
How much we have the reserve, and how much OPEC supplies.
Right.
Now, the world oil demand was put at 76 barrels per day, 76 million barrels per day in 2002, and with the increasing demand, is estimated that there is need for 90.6 million barrels per day in 2010, mm-hmm. and would be increased to 103.2 million barrels per day in 2020. So, if we now we see the reserve, the world crude oil reserves are estimated at more than 1 trillion barrels, of which the 11 OPEC member countries hold more than 75%.
Mm-hmm.
OPEC members currently produce about 27 million to 28 million barrels per day of oil, or more than, as I mentioned, 40% of the world total output, which stands at about 75 million barrels per day.
Correct.
Now, I have the figures, for instance, which countries really are the have the largest reserve and which countries are the largest producers. For instance, with regard to reserves, Saudi Arabia is number one.
Mm-hmm.
Its reserve stands for 262,697 million barrels. That's a reserve.
Right.
And number two is Iraq. And we can see why Iraq is important, because Iraq has the second largest oil reserve for over 112,500 million barrels. Number three is Iran, 99,080 million barrels, and then United Arab Emirates and Kuwait, which I don't need to go to these details. But more important about the current situation, and you mentioned about the oil price fluctuation in the world market, and why OPEC is also important when they cut the production or increase the production. At present, Saudi Arabia again is number one in oil production with 7,889 million barrels per day, and number two is Russia.
Uh-huh.
Which is, of course, not a member, 6,730, and then United States, 5,801, Iran is 3,572, and China is 3,297 million barrel per day. But again, as we know, the importance of oil as a major energy source, which continues to the demand continues to grow, and we remain the world's single most important source of energy. The oil shares in world energy, however, may slightly be falling. At present, is about 41% of total energy requirement. But you know, because nowadays, and at least it has been for a number of years, that people, countries have been trying to find alternative energy, including the United States, but nothing serious has been done. But with coming gas, now this proportion, 41%, will slightly decrease.
I want you to speak about the mechanisms of pricing. Basically, where actually the price is being set. It's not at OPEC, because as you mentioned, OPEC has 40% of the world, but also they control the supply. But the price and demand is being set in another kind of just like a stock market, but it's a mercantile exchange, like in New York or in London and in Singapore.
Because OPEC is one of the main supplier of oil, so after long research, the OPEC has decided, and partly because of the fluctuation and devaluation of U.S. dollars in the recent years, so the conference, the OPEC decided to fix its rate between $22 and $28 per barrel. And this is the reason for this, usually, as I mentioned, the Brent, for instance, North Sea oil, here OPEC collects pricing data on a color basket of seven crude oils, including Algeria Saran blend, Indonesia, Nigeria, Saudi Arabia, and you know, the producers of various OPEC countries, which of course, as I mentioned, some of them could be of better quality, so-called, or more expensive. So the average, they thought it should be between 22 and 28. But now the reason why the petrol price has gone up, especially in U.S., really, I don't think it's fair to blame OPEC for that, because all in all, if you calculate the real value of petroleum, even at present, is not higher than the 1970s. We consider, you know, the cost of living and the standard of these things.
First of all, let me ask you one question, because you live in Europe. Has the price at station gone up the same way it has gone up in the U.S., or because of the dollar devaluation is the kind of a cause of this price hike?
Well, frankly, the prices have gone a little bit up. I think this was a very good question you raised. Let me just give you one example. U.S. is getting about 13% of its oil needs from Venezuela. And you know, there was a strike and all that, and 20% was lessing. And then U.S. Has problem with refineries. I give you one example that who has benefited from these oil prices. I have some figures here. During 1996 to 2000, G7, you know, G7 is group of seven developed nations.
Right.
Oil taxes, and is estimated as $1 trillion. While at the same time, estimated total OPEC oil revenue during the same period is $850 billion. You can compare.
Yeah, it's about $500 billion more has gone to G7 oil taxes in these countries.
Only tax, and you can compare it how these prices have gone up. It's not the prices, really. Now, I remember I went on a mission, when was it? Over a year ago. You could exchange €1 for $1 for 1.05 or 04
euro,
and now 1 euro is 1.23, 24
dollar.
Went up to 28. So this is really, I mean, when you talk to this, I've been talking to some members at the corridor of this OPEC meeting. I say that this is not fair that they blame it, because the revenue in real terms has not gone up, and
yes.
Moreover, the reason why this recent OPEC meeting reduced the production for 1 million barrels per day, because they know that the second quarter of the season the demand will go down.
Mm-hmm.
So the prices will not stay as much as is known, because there's enough stock in the market.
Okay, let's go a little not to the details of the pricing, but I want to ask you more on the political side of the oil. First of all, I want to ask you this question: how do you think OPEC has functioned within the countries of the producing oil as a facilitator, as a kind of adhesive, as a system of getting them together? Because in the past, we know that, for example, Iraq, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Iran, they all had different opinion politically, but they have been working together for more than 40 years now in OPEC. How does that really impact in the life of the people in those countries, and how much are they basically relying on oil revenues? And when the prices goes down, as it did in 98 or in 86, went down to like $9 a barrel, the life and the debt in those countries was really dramatized by these changes.
Well, I think this is a very good point you raised, and as I mentioned, despite that I have not been, for instance, recently an official member, but I've been following the events, and also to see how this OPEC has been developing itself. In my view, OPEC is now much more independent than, say, 15, 20 years ago or 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, Saudi Arabia, for instance, was the sole decision maker for OPEC, not because of its political influence, but because they could open the tap.
Mm-hmm.
And almost supply half of the whole OPEC. You know, Saudi Arabia can even now it's Saudi Arabia at present is, for instance, 7-8 million. There is no limit if you want to break the market. But now it has come to the extent that at the recent OPEC meeting, which they decided to have their quota, and some countries, of course, there was some different opinion, like Kuwait and Emirates, they were really trying to follow U.S. policy not to cut the things or postpone the reduction. But countries like Saudi Arabia and Iran already informed their customers that, look, we are committed to cut our supplies. So that's why it affected the thing. Moreover, the countries also, oil producing countries, have realized that this oil will not remain forever.
Mm-hmm.
And they cannot rely on oil revenue as before. So that's why you could see lots of parallel activities has been going on in these countries, and trying to find some non-oil exports, or at least to some extent in make some investment. But the problem with the oil industry is itself, especially at present in countries like Iran and Iraq, is really they need billions of dollars for investment in oil industry, for oil wells, refineries. You know, some countries really, you know, it's a pity that they have to send the crude oil outside while they have lots of refineries, and they import again. So there is some kind of better unity among the OPEC countries and so-called more independent. But regarding the influence and political aspects of OPEC and the decision, if you remember a number of years ago, before OPEC was going to hold its conference, United States sent even the Secretary of Energy. I remember, I think I was in Vienna at that time, you know, sending to convince the members to increase the supply, you know, so that I don't know to what extent it was, but now it has come to the stage that now, after the decision of the OPEC meeting on the 31st of March, which was of course decided earlier in February in the meeting in Algiers, that United States became concerned and did its best to maybe to postpone this, but did not somehow succeed. I don't know. Of course, the major oil companies, of course, belong to the United States. But however, with this OPEC decision, it was not possible. And this Bush administration said that it was disappointed with the OPEC move to reduce reduction. And of course, they accuse OPEC and the Saudi in particular, as I mentioned, because Saudi always was following whatever, you know, the wishes of the United States, and I don't know this time. And they say it was not good for the consumers and American people. And I'm sure you also heard that the spokesman for the White House mentioned about the disappointment of the administration, which of course there are some politicians say that the Bush administration is not really concerned with the price of oil, but they are concerned because of we're getting close to the election, and the increase of price of oil may have an effect on the economy, which will not be good for the Bush administration.
Yes, you were listening to Mr. Hossein Kamali, an expert and a former delegate of Iranian oil company to OPEC, and a former United Nations advisor and director for West Africa. I talked to him in Vienna, and we were discussing issues about the rise in price of oil in the U.S. and how it relates really to OPEC cut. I want to give you some kind of clarification and kind of point of discussion. First of all, when Dr. Kamali said that OPEC and basically most of the U.S. Energy company and oil company, they agreed on $22 to $28 a barrel. This is the minimum that the production would be feasible, economically feasible, and they can do it with $22 a barrel. And the reason that in most of the oil wells in Texas and around the U.S., the production has basically fallen down to zero is because the price is not feasible in the U.S. And in those countries, it's still possible to produce if it is at least $22 a barrel. The other thing is that OPEC total revenue for 1980 was about $600 billion. The total OPEC revenue for a year was $600 billion. Today, it is around $220 billion, which means it's about one-third of what it was in 1980, which reflects on the per capita, I mean per person, it results in a difference of one-sixth because the population has gone up. For OPEC in 1980, the revenue per capita was $1,800, and today is only $390. And when you think about the countries that are totally dependent on oil revenue, you would understand that what does it mean if they if the price goes down, for example, as it did back in 1998 and 86, it went down to $9 a barrel. The impact on those countries and those people was significant. I mean, they had a huge amount of debt, and it's just recently that some of them have been able to get out of debt. Even Saudi Arabia spent all their revenue and reserves in their federal bank. You can listen to the previous shows of Voices of the Middle East on my website at www.voicesofthemiddleeast.com. Voices of the Middle East is one word. And you can send me email if you have any comments or any suggestion for future shows. But make sure those phones are ringing and your support is flowing. Thank you very much. Have a good evening. Thank you.